Hi, I'm Malachi, and you're listening to the Judge a Book podcast. Downloads and reviews help us out a ton, so leave us 5 stars before you go. Every single week, join in for our book club where we talk about the books that we love, or maybe not so loved. New books will be chosen every month, and you'll get to listen to exactly how we judge a book. Hello and welcome back to the Judge a Book podcast. We are finishing up Furyborn this week. Oh my gosh, I am stoked to talk about everything because a lot went down, not only this week, but the whole book. So like being able to tie everything together, I'm so excited for. And of course, I'm back with Cameron this week. Hi, Cameron.
Hello, hello.
And this is technically her last week with us. So I'm very sad about that. Oh. But hopefully sometime in the future, she'll come back on with me because this has been so much fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so make sure you connect with Cameron. This is the last week that all of her information will be down in the podcast description, so go follow her on TikTok, follow her Instagram, because she is awesome.
You.
So before we get going, if you've not finished the book, don't keep listening because spoilers are ahead. This week's episode of the Judge a Book podcast is brought to you in part by Ibotta, a cashback rewards app that I use to make real money every time I shop for groceries, online purchases, and more. If you want to sign up for Ibotta, use my code in the pod description. I love Ibotta, and I recently hit the 100 club, meaning I've earned a $100 cashback, which of course I'm going to be using for books. So if you want to sign up for Ibotta, use the code in my description below and earn cashback on your everyday purchases. All right. I think this week I'm going to separate the summaries again, and I think I'm going to start with Riel just because we ended on Eliana. So yeah, so much went on. Going to get into these summaries so that we can get to chatting about it. Just a little side note too for everybody listening. We both finished it the night we recorded, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally the night that we recorded this last episode, we both like sat and finished the book. It was great. So I hope you guys were like as interested in it as we were, because we were ready to devour it.
Oh, we absolutely did.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. I guess I'll get in with Riel. Riel starts off on a strong note. The first chapter we read of Riel's this week is her little steamy scene with Audric.
Yeah, that was hot and heavy.
That was definitely hot and heavy, and literally as well, because she, like, flickered the lights and the fire was going crazy and all of that. So we get to see that she might can lose control when she is distracted. She definitely needs to be focused to remain control. So we got to see that little scene. Obviously, the romance is budding there with Audric and Riel. If you can say budding, it's a little full bloom. Maybe. Then we see Riel's fire trial, which we found out last week that she didn't even have to do. She could have just become the Sun Queen, but she had to go on doing this. And that is kind of when everything hits the fan. So yeah. She has this fire trial. Sloane is there, and Sloane has Tal's caster, which I guess is Tal the lead of the fire. Is he like the head of the fireplace? Because he has acolytes and all of that. So
yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think he must be the head of fire, however they're titled. So Sloane says Tal is in the middle of this trial, bound, and she has to save him, which I'm like, oh my gosh. So not only does Riel have to focus on controlling this element, she also has to deal with like her PTSD and all of that. Mm-hmm. So freaking insane.
From killing her mom and all that trauma, now she has to face this like another person that she like clearly loves.
Yeah, because he's been in her life since she was 5. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, he's essentially been there the entire time, and now he's stuck in the middle of this house. Well, I just said house. You guys all know, you've read it. They recreate her house. Like, so like, how triggering can that be? Like, in the middle of this maze, her house is recreated. Tal is like tied up in their parlor, and she's having to get him out. She's there with Tal. She's trying to like calm down from all of her nerves, and they start like chanting the fire rite, like burn clean and burn bright and whatever. They're having this moment. She's gonna save him, and then we hear Corian say, "We begin," and Riel is like saying, "He's here." And oh my gosh, I think both of us, after we read that, were like, "What the heck just happened?" I was shocked, to say, like, the very least. Like, minimally, I can say that I was shocked. My jaw was on the ground.
Yeah, I did not expect him to be physically, like actually in a body. Mm-hmm. In the first book. Like, I thought he was going to be a completely just a mental being.
That is not where I thought that this fire trial was going. Like, and not at all. I did not expect this to happen. So, she is now, like, entranced by trying to find him. She leaves Tal in the middle of the house. And she's running to find Corian. There are people, like, all the spectators are, like, screaming and running. They're saying, like, protect the king. Like, I mean, it's going down. I think it's Riel that noticed that it's the Sauvelier's colors, which is mm-hmm. Ludovine's family, Lord Dervin's family. So essentially it's them attacking the people. She has a conversation with Sloane, I believe, and Sloane's like, why are they doing this? Like, we're on their side. What's going on? I mean, this is a crazy scene. There's a lot of action going on, so I'm just trying to hit, like, some of the key points. Also, a lot of these people have their eyes, like, grayed out.
They're cloudy.
they just have, like, a blank look on their face, I guess, with these cloudy eyes. After this, Ludovine, like, yells to Riel to save Audric. She calls her Chevelle over. They go, they try to save Audric. Ludovine gets in trouble. Ludovine falls off the freaking cliff and dies. I was about to cry in this scene. I didn't actually cry, but I was so freaking close. I think the only reason I didn't is because I was so, like, trying to get through the book.
Yeah, I was like, just keep... Also, like I said, I think the first week, when Claire writes these action scenes, there's always so much happening that I don't have time necessarily to process. Like, it doesn't hit me emotionally. It's mm-hmm. just, like, me trying to mentally sort through everything that's happening. I don't think I fully processed
what... Yeah, I had to read it, like, 3 times. I was like, Ludovine did not just freaking die. She didn't. Like, there's no way. Did she actually fall off that cliff? Like, I was in shock. Ludovine falls off the cliff. Then this whole time, Corian's talking to her and is like, you're closer, things like this. She finally finds Corian, and he's there. There's a scene with her dad, the king, and Corian. We're all in this big scene. They're asking her, like, do you know this man? She's like, yes, I do know him. like, awkward. Yeah, I do know him. Then Corian, I think, as an attempt to, like, overpower Riel, like, to assert some kind of dominance, takes her dad under control, and Riel says that she's gonna kill Corian right there. Corian says, if you do that, your dad's gonna die. He has them, like, all held in, like, this, like, state, like, this trance. Well, Riel attacks Corian. She, like, pulls, like, all of this power out. I think it's, like, some kind of the sun spinning power. She burns Corian. That does technically release her father, but her father does end up dying. King Bastian dies. Ludovine's dead. All these random people are dead.
It took me a hot minute to realize that all three of them died down there.
It took me a minute, too. And honestly, I didn't even realize that they were all dead, especially the king. I didn't know that the king was dead until probably they started Audra planning
up, right?
I probably didn't realize it till they started planning his funeral. Like, I had no idea. I was so confused. There was just so much to process. I thought
they were fine.
Mm-hmm. And when I reread her dad dying, I can see it now happening, but again, I think it was just partially so much going on, partially, like, trying to get through it to find out what happens next. Like, it was just a mess. I was very surprised to see that they had all died, especially the mm-hmm. king. Even though last week I mentioned that the king's gonna have to die for Audric to be the king.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, there we go.
Yep, there we go. I guess Audric can be the king, but we could talk about this in a minute, but it's almost like he's not gonna be in charge yet, at least from what I understand. I don't know. Anyway, so the Archon insists that they go ahead and have, like, the ceremony, because I think it's an eclipse or some kind of something, some reason that they have to have it on this day, like it's been planned out like this. Or the solstice.
A solstice.
They're gonna crown her the Sun Queen, even though, like, the king's not even buried yet and they haven't taken care of those matters. But But they crown her the Sun Queen. During the ceremony of crowning her the Sun Queen, Ludivine shows up.
She just walks on in.
She just struts on in there. She's not worried about a thing.
She's, like, not wearing clothes either.
Yeah, like, she does not have a care in the world.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, Ludivine shows up. She's talking to Riel in her mind. I remember messaging you, like, what the heck is going on? Is Ludivine in her mind? Is Corian in Ludivine's body? I did not know what was going on. But Ludivine shows up. She says, you gotta play it off. You gotta tell everybody that you resurrected me so they believe you, like, that you're the Sun Queen. I don't know. And
plot twist.
Freaking insane. Yeah. So after that, like, scene, they all go and talk, Audric, Riel, and Ludivine, and Ludivine's like, I'm actually an angel. I've been here since you were born. I took over Ludivine's body when she died at age 16. She was like, you remember when Ludivine had that fever? I took over her body.
Like, yeah, she actually didn't survive. She died, and I inhabited her body and pretended to be Ludivine for years.
For all this time. And don't hate me. I love you guys so much. Please don't hate me. Yeah. Like, Ludivine, what the heck? No wonder you didn't care to be with Audrey.
Oh my gosh, I know. I was thinking about it today. When I read that, I didn't really process. Like, I was, like, shocked. I was like, what is happening? I want to know who the angel is because she, like, refuses to say what her real name is. Like, she's like, it's my dead name, essentially. Like, please don't associate me with it. I'm Ludivine, which also was, like, kind of weird. I'm like, but you're not Ludivine.
Yeah. Like, you took over Ludivine. It's not like you just decided not to be called Ludivine anymore. Like,
yeah.
Or, like, you know, that you wanted to be called Ludivine. You took over her body.
Right. And so I was driving home today thinking about recording this episode, and I got so sad. I was like, Ludivine died.
Yeah.
Like, granted, we never knew true Ludivine, but, like, she died.
She did, and no one knew it. Like, her parents didn't get to mourn her or anything.
That's so upsetting.
Yeah, like, whatever happens to, like, their souls in this book, like, Ludivine has one, and no one even knew that she died. Like, yeah, it's freaking awful. So then we get, like, this whole scene of Ludivine, like, trying to explain angels and, like, what's going on and how all of this is happening. She says that there are millions of angels, which to me means in one of these next books we're gonna have a war. There's gonna be another, like, angelic war. There just has to, if there's millions of angels. And currently dozens are out of the gate and in this world because they've, like, been pushing on the gate for all of these years and, like, they never grow tired, so they can just do that until they can escape. And Corian is one of the strongest angels, period. Like, that's still left. Riel ends up, like, confessing somewhat to Audric about Corian and that he's been in her head ever since the boon chase, which feels like forever ago that they were in this boon chase.
I know.
But she says, like, the voice has been in my head since then and kind of explains a little bit of that. Her and Audric have this moment before the king's funeral procession, and he's like, you know, my mom is gonna be the one that leads us into war, which I was surprised about. I figured that this was gonna be the segue for, like, Audric to take over and be in charge, but it seems like his mom is actually gonna be the one in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me nervous for Riel, because what we've seen in the past, Queen Genevieve does not really like Riel, and Riel quote-unquote resurrected Ludivine but didn't resurrect her husband. So I just am a little bit scared of Queen Genevieve right now. So we end with the funeral scene. There's, like, the whole funeral procession, and you can tell that there's, like, some distaste in the audience towards Riel, and Ludivine tells her, you know, like, yeah, they're upset that you could resurrect me and not all of their loved ones. And then we end with the wind, quote unquote, whispering her name, which is probably Corian. But yeah, that's it for Riel this week.
The scene with Corian when he was burnt, and he, like, scrambled away from her and was like, don't look at me, not like this.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out if he had actually been, like, he just, like, in that moment was like, don't look at me, because I'm hurt and I'm weak and I don't want you to see me like this. Or if she had stripped away his, like, quote-unquote mask, like, if he's able to front, if he's able to change his appearance is what I'm trying to say, and he has constructed this appearance, but really when she stripped away with her power, he was all disfigured and burnt from the first Angelic War.
All I can freaking think about, which is awful, is Lord Voldemort in Harry Potter when he, like, gets stripped down of all of his powers and, like, he's just this, like, raw little baby thing. That's all I can think about. That's what I think Corian's like. I didn't even think about it being, like, a mask that he was fronting, but I can definitely see that as a possibility. I just figured that he was this gross little raw thing.
And that's our co-star, Oliver.
Yes. We're cat lovers in this podcast.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, most likely he was just burnt from her power, but I was like, wait a second, but, like, the way, just something about the way I read it, I was like, does he actually look like that?
You never know either, like,
change his appearance.
Yeah, and Claire, too, when writing, she could have initially thought it one way, and then when she goes back to write other books, they can always think, oh, that's an opportunity where I could use that to twist something, you know? So, even if her intention was one thing now, doesn't mean that that's how it's gonna play out the rest of the books, so...
Right.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay, I think I know why I thought that. Because we see in Eliana's chapter, when she first originally saw the Emperor, he didn't appear disfigured in any way. Mm-hmm. And, like, granted, he's an angel and he probably has healing capabilities, which just gives me more cause to believe that Eliana's actually his. But anyways, I digress. If he has healing powers because he's an angel, then that would make sense. But if he doesn't have healing powers, wouldn't he be burnt in the future?
I don't know.
Which is why I was like, oh, can he modify himself?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're gonna see, because we're gonna be reading the sequels, so I guess we'll find out. Always when there's a shift in power, too, there's always the opportunity for things to change drastically. Like, just because one leader did things one way doesn't mean that that's going to continue, you know? Especially when it seems like she was already plotting with her brother, you know, to get Ludivine in and all of that. So it seems like there's already been some behind the scenes with the queen, and I feel like that might continue on. I just feel like there's going to be some issues with the queen in the future books.
Something has to happen. Because obviously Audric has to step up and become king, but we know Riel marries him and that she becomes the queen. However, if this isn't their move because King Bastian passed away, it's not like they were like, oh, you're the Sun Queen and, like, you know, you're obviously next in line for the throne, get married. Ludivine came back. So something still has to happen where they, like, where Audric has to be like, I'm not marrying Ludivine, I want to marry Riel. Like, how is that going to play out? Especially if Queen Genevieve doesn't like Riel, and I'm certain she doesn't, she will not at this point.
And, like, Lord Durvin's on house arrest for the rest of his days, but if Queen Genevieve's in control...
Durvin's dead.
Oh, yeah, he is. I was about to say, I don't know, yeah, never mind, doesn't freaking matter, he's dead. But, like, why, also, this is also random, why did Ludivine choose Ludivine's body again? Wouldn't it have just been a lot easier if she just chose somebody else's body and, like, I don't know, maybe she thought she couldn't convince them, but that's what happened.
I would say it's trust.
But
back when Ludivine originally died?
No, I mean when she fell off the cliff just now, like, there's all these dead people that recently died. The angel technically probably could have chosen somebody else's body and try, but I mean, I'm sure it's just the trust thing. Like, yeah I don't know. Also, she can be close to them in the kingdom and the palace because she's part of the royal family already, so you know, I don't know. Craziness.
I almost wonder if the angel inhabiting Ludivine is Zara from the future.
Maybe. That would be very interesting, but very sad that Ludivine gets stuck as a wraith. But that would be so interesting. She seems to know a lot about Riel's past and says, like, it's not her story to tell. So, I mean, Eliana's past. So maybe that would be interesting.
Or maybe not. Because we do get to see a glimpse of Zara's real body. And if she was ashamed while she was Ludivine to be like, you don't ref, like, she's like against the angels, like, you don't reference me like that. I guess that wouldn't make sense. Something would have had to have happened, a shift would have had to happen in her character.
Yeah. I don't know, but that would be interesting if that did work out. Let's get into Eliana's chapter.
Let's do it.
I'm still more of a fan of Riel, I can't lie, but a lot of stuff happened with Eliana. Here we go. Last time that we saw them, they were trying to escape the Fidelia cell, and she's with Zara. Zara, like, puts the guard under, like, a trance for a few minutes. She gets the keys, they get out, and then they go to find Navi.
Poor Navi.
Poor Navi. This was so sad. She has, like, I think a tattoo or markings and carvings all over her body. She's extremely weak. They get her out of her prison cell. And they're leaving this place. As they're trying to escape, there's a guard that, like, makes a comment about them, like, being sheep and trying to escape and all of this. As it's happening, the wolf shows up and he's there to fight for them. They escape. They're heading to a safe house in the woods, I think. Eliana is curious about what's happened to Navi. She asks Zara. Zara tells her all about the crawlers.
The crawlers.
The crawlers. So apparently the Fidelia are experimenting and messing with people's genetics and creating these creatures from all of these women that they're taking.
Really messed up.
Extremely messed up. Like, I mean, also Zara makes a comment about how this hasn't happened to Navi yet, which leads me to believe that at some point Navi is going to turn into a crawler, which is bothering.
No, that's really sad.
It is extremely sad, and I'm very, I'm nervous for that scene, what that's gonna entail.
I don't think it's gonna happen.
I don't know, but Zara seems to know what's going on.
Well, in the end, they try to heal her, and they're like, she was just prepped for it. She didn't go through.
Okay. Well, good. I must have missed that. I've obviously missed a lot this week.
But there could always be a plot twist.
Yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen to Navi. There is a chance. Zara mentions that it hasn't happened yet, but hopefully that doesn't happen. Simon walks up on her talking to Zara, I believe, and Eliana has some choice words for Simon. She's very unhappy with him because of the laboratories and all the experiments, and that Simon has known all of this about her all this time, and that she's a sun queen, and that the Fidelia probably have her mom, and all this stuff. So she's very unhappy with Simon.
Yeah.
She talks with Simon. We also find out that Zara can't be seen by anybody else, but she can be heard. And while they are chatting, he also mentions that he is ordered by the prophet to do these things, which I thought was very interesting. Like, it's just, I just want to know, like, who the prophet themselves is. Like, they always talk about the word of the prophet and stuff like that, but having the prophet, like, personified as being an actual human is very interesting.
because they mentioned, so we get the snippets of the word of the prophet. It's the first snippet in the book is from the prophet. They said, I'd like to believe, some say that the queen died sad, but I'd like to believe that she was angry. And then we know that the wolf is, like, the prophet's, like, lackey. From then on, he's just, like, not mentioned again until now. Mm-hmm. And so that is one of my biggest questions, is, like, who is the prophet and is it Simon's father?
Ooh, I don't know, because he died, but...
But did we see a dead body?
Oh, yeah, that's true. But they're not dead. They're not. If we don't see their body, they're not dead. That's happened so many times in this book. So, side note, Harkin's alive. 100%. Anyway, so, yeah, we get the little tidbit about the prophet. While they're having this chat, the house catches on fire. The safe house that they're at. And who's there? Razaval. Again. Razaval's there. She's, like, focused on getting Remy out, so I think Simon's fighting Razaval. Remy's in the house, it's burning, and Hob is in the house. They're, like, shoving on the door, they get Remy out. So it's Remy, Hob, and Zara together, I think, and they leave Simon behind to fight Razaval. They're heading to the Narrow Sea, where they plan to... Oh, and Navi. I forgot Navi in that. They're planning to get across to Astavar. Yeah, Navi's pretty important in these next scenes. For me to have been forgetting her. So, they go to the Narrow Sea. While they're traveling, they run into a man whose name is Malik. We have Tamrin and Malik. We got so freaking close. both of us with our names.
To our names.
Yeah. We got so close. And Malak is actually Navi's brother, who is a prince from Astabar. Yay! Lucky chance. He's gonna help them get across the narrow sea to Astabar on a smuggler ship. There's a messenger that comes to Malak and tells him that Simon's been captured, if I'm remembering right. Simon's mm-hmm. been captured and he's on another ship and he's being tortured.
Because they thought he was dead. They were like, oh, Simon's gonna die. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's Eliana's, whatever. Someone's gonna die. I live. I'm good. That's all she cares about. She's like, willing to leave Harkin, willing to leave Simon. I don't freaking know. She's gotta be the Blood Queen. They find out that Simon is getting tortured on one of these ships. Eliana has her weird savior complex again after letting someone, like, leaving someone to die. She always, like, wants to go back after the fact, it seems like, and try and save them, except for Harkin. And so, they're going on the ship where Simon is. Simon has been bound, his arms are, like, tied back, he's got carvings all in him, he's definitely been tortured, and Rosavall's there. Rosavall says he's gonna end her, which doesn't seem to add up to me, because he should be wanting to take her to the Emperor. But, a big old fight scene. I think Zara possesses Rosavall, so that they're able to kill him. Crazy. So does that mean, I don't know, to me that means, like, all these people are, like, soulless or something. That's why they're not dying. And it takes, like, having something in them to make them die. I don't freak. Anyway, Zara possesses him. Rosavall's dead, we think. The fleet, then, in the mix of all of this, the fleet that's outside starts attacking Astabar, like, shooting and big ol' fight.
The Rosavall thing, I'm just gonna cut in real quick. She, like, sliced his throat, and, like, that was it. And I was like, did you not learn a single lesson from Lord Morbray? You sliced his throat and he healed himself and came back to life.
Or him. Like, she's killed him before, too. Rosavall. Well, they pushed him off the ledge.
I was like, decapitate him. Completely sever the head, throw one end over the ship. Like, come on.
Yeah,
come
rip on. His heart out. How many out? Times? Your mom apparently ripped Audric's heart out, so, like, do that. I just don't get how she knew. Like, she, like, looks over at Zara. They have, like, this, like, eye connection, and then Zara gets in his body. Like, how did we know that? How does she know that? She doesn't know anything about magic or angels or anything. It's weird.
Oh, maybe because that's what Zara was doing the whole time when she was distracting the guards. She was taking over the guards' bodies, so she was like, oh, she's gonna do it again.
Okay. Yeah, that makes maybe some more sense. So, Rosavall dies, we think. The fleet's attacking Astabar. We then find out Simon's blind because of some poisonous gas, I think. So he's blind. He's wounded. Zara is out of her magical power. She can't do anything anymore. And they're having to try and get in, like, a lifeboat, I think, across to the ship that's gonna take them, that's supposed to take them across, but everything's going on. So, they're trying to leave the ship that they're on. Simon starts, like, telling her the story. I think he thinks he's gonna die, so he's, like, trying to get it all out. I don't really know. And he's, like, telling her, like, I was holding on to you, this is yours, like, freaking out about this rag that he has in his pocket. And all that. He's just trying to, like, explain to her, like, we're the last two left from Sildaria. They're trying to row across the sea when the crawlers get released. The crawlers are essentially, to me, the mutts from the Hunger Games. They have the faces of all of the women, and, like, they're literally meant just to attack. They're, like, war beings, essentially. But they have the faces.
They have, like, weird fur growing out of them, and their, like, limbs are, like, thickened and disformed.
Yeah. And Eliana's mom is one of the crawlers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So, Eliana has to kill her mom. Tragic, technically. I hate to be like this, but I hated this scene so much. I told Cameron, I just didn't like it. I didn't like crawlers. I didn't like their faces. It felt so Hunger Games to me.
It felt unnecessary.
And I just didn't like how the mom's story ended up like this. So, I feel bad that she had to kill her mom, that would be literally terrible. Sad that the mom had to die. It's even sadder that she has to tell Remy, but I just didn't like how that scene was executed.
Literally, the whole purpose of, like, as far as this book goes, the whole purpose of the girls being taken, of her mom being taken, is just so that Eliana can have this crisis moment at the end of the book and, like, literally, like, end, like, essentially start ending the world.
And to me, I felt like that could have happened a million different other ways. And to to me, I would have liked that better, but I don't know. I just didn't like it. I've loved this book so far, but that is one chapter I don't like. So this anger that she gets from having to kill her mom, Simon's like trying to take advantage of that and like telling her to like unleash her powers and whatever, or just to like get mad. And she does, and she like creates this massive storm. There's giant waves. The waves are like literally like taking warships down and snapping them in half. Mm-hmm. She doesn't even know this is going on, though, because she has her eyes closed.
The whole book, Simon kept on, like, egging her on. He's like, please, do it. Get mad.
Yeah, get mad at me.
And I thought that he was, like, I knew he was trying to get her to release her powers, because obviously we know from Rielle's chapter that, like, anger has a lot to do with it, or, like, intense emotion. Mm-hmm. So I knew that was part of it, but I also thought that it was just, like, him, like, bantering with her. Like, yeah, do it. Get mad. Mm-hmm. I would love to see it. But obviously he was trying to get to the point where she's at now, where she's literally just, like, destroying the world. Like,
yeah,
like you said, like, ships are being snapped in half.
Yeah, ships. Like, ships are freaking huge.
Mm-hmm.
I think she passes out. She wakes up 3 days later with Simon next to her. They have this little gushy scene, kind of.
We see yeah, a little... what was that about?
Yeah, I was very confused. I didn't expect that at all.
They almost kissed.
They did. She was all handsy with him.
I was like, I don't know how I feel about the Simon Eliana love interest.
Yep, there's a lot of things that seem odd about that pairing. You're gonna hate your mother-in-law, Simon, just so you know. Spoiler alert, you don't like your mother-in-law. She lived 1,020 years ago, but you don't like her.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot going on with their relationship that's odd. Then, like, Zara comes in, Remy comes in, everybody comes in. We've got a whole powwow for the last chapter. Remy's asking a lot of questions, and it seems like the next step is that they are going to try and take down the Emperor. Yay! Surprise, surprise. That's what I expected to happen, but nonetheless, that's where we are. That's where the book freaking ends. Wowza.
How I felt about the book as a whole is that it's insane. Literally the entire book, you're just like, what is happening? Like, the beginning, you're confused. Mm-hmm. And you, like, there's, like, I did not, it's not that I didn't understand the world building. I didn't understand the geography. I, like, couldn't figure out where these characters were located in their respective world. And that was the most confusing thing. And then once I started to feel more comfortable with the characters, it became a game of, like, let's try to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Who is who? How are they related? What's gonna happen? Who do we think is taking the girls? Which, that whole plot line still doesn't, just by the end, that whole plot line just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, is that really the only purpose for taking the girls, or is there more to it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's exactly how it felt. Like I said in the first week, I read 50 pages of this book before, and I put it down and never read it again until now. And I agree, like, the first few chapters are confusing as heck, but I freaking loved this book. I think because it's so entangled and there's just so much, and, like, my brain just enjoyed constantly trying to connect this and that, and who is this and who is that, and, like, who's dead and who's mm-hmm. not really dead, and, like, all of these different parts. It was just so entertaining to me. Like, I mean, I was constantly trying to predict what was going to happen, and sometimes I feel like we could kind of predict what was going to happen. Some things we don't even know if we predicted them correctly, but other things were just shocking. Like, Ludovine was definitely probably one of my biggest shocks of the book.
Yeah. I think that was the biggest plot twist of this book. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a plot twist that was, like, I don't know, I feel differently about this book. I do really, I loved it. I loved the experience. I loved being able to read it with you and talk to you about it. But normally, let's compare it to, like, Crescent City, which I know you haven't read yet, but in that book, like, the plot twists are, like, earth-shattering.
Yes.
And you're like, what is happening? They definitely weren't
like that. And it didn't... And, like, calling it a plot twist, like, yeah, it was shocking, but it really didn't change the plot all of that much.
Right, right.
Probably one of the biggest plot twists that we, or you, predicted early on was the Emperor being Corian. So, I don't know. I think if we hadn't discussed as much as we did, I think we would have been more shocked reading along on True. our own. So, yeah.
Or the that Simon is the wolf. Mm-hmm. Young Simon is older Simon. Because that one, it took me a good second. It wasn't immediately when I read it that I was like, oh, 2 and 2 makes sense. Mm-hmm. = 4. It was when I was preparing to record our first episode, and I was like, whoa, wait, what?
Yes. That was definitely shocking to me. I definitely didn't put those two together when I was reading it. It was when I went back and took notes, which if I was just reading this book on my own and not for the podcast, I would have never went back and took notes. Like, who knows when I would have figured it out.
Yeah. Probably when he was like, I have your blanket.
And you're like, oh, no, man. There's no way. I hope it wouldn't have taken me that long. But maybe for some people it did, and maybe it would have. It's just a totally different experience, like, dissecting a book than it is just, like, sitting down and mm-hmm. reading it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, something else I'm super excited about is that Remy gets his own book or, like, some kind of published writing. That was one of the chapter headers, yeah. And I was so excited to see that for him. I really hope his character gets, like, continued development and we get to see more of that.
That means that Remy has a life,
mm-hmm.
like, beyond his childhood, enough that he will get to read through this. I mean, I don't want to jinx it and say that he'll live forever, yeah. but he lives long enough to write down what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And I don't really remember what he said, but it was something negative about Eliana, if I remember right. Okay, well, maybe it's not exactly negative. But
you're like, being exaggerated. Okay.
But the book is called The Terrible Tale of the Deadly Dark Dread. And it says they called her the Dread, not knowing that beneath the mask and cloak and painted on smile, she was simply a girl. A girl with a heart that burned for blood.
Blood queen?
Blood queen. Please, please, please. Which, okay, that's something else I want to talk about. I don't think Simon has powers anymore, from what I understand. He, like, right. The marks on his back are gone. He couldn't time travel anymore, it seems. Like, in the middle of his time traveling. But in my ideal world, Simon would take Eliana back in time to Riel. Riel would see Eliana. She would have this positive light. She would change her motives. Audric, Riel, and Simon and Eliana live a happy world. But this is a dark fantasy novel, so it's not going to happen. Yeah. But, you know, that would be my little dream world. Oh, Corian, at least I think it's Corian, when Eliana uses her powers, is like, I felt that, Eliana. You can't hide from me now.
Yep.
Bum, bum, bum. Yep. Has to be Corian, I think. Also, something that I didn't expect, I figured Simon had been, like, watching Eliana this whole time, but he hasn't. He didn't know that she existed until, like, a few months ago when he heard of this girl that, like, magically healed herself. Mm-hmm. And he went and found her after that, which was surprising to me. What scene from the book do you feel like has stuck with you the most? I want to say the prologue, but I've read it twice, so I feel like that's not exactly fair. But through the entire book, I constantly was thinking about the prologue. Oh, but what happened in the prologue?
Yeah, I think that would be a fair thing to say, because when you first read the prologue, you're so utterly confused of, like, mm-hmm. what's going on. And then the more you read, you're like, that prologue was filled mm-hmm. with information that we just didn't know to look for at the time.
Yes.
And because I felt the same way. I was like, I need to reread, like, the whole book. I was like, I need to reread the prologue.
Mm-hmm. And we both just reread it
mm-hmm.
after we finished the entire book. But, like, that's definitely a whole nother thing we can talk about, is the prologue and reading it the second time and how many things stood out to me from it. Cameron's not happy about this little quote out of it.
I just won't believe it.
But when Eliana's born, it's, like, noted how much she looks like Audric. There is a quote that says that she looks so much like her late father, which it doesn't technically say Audric, but then it, like, the next chapter or the next paragraph talks about the Lightbringer and Audric and whatever. So, to me, I think that she probably looks like Audric. It's also mentioned later on how Simon can see both of her parents in her
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So, it leads me to believe that Audric is her father. But Cameron...
And my theory is still that Corian's her father, because listen, Linda. If everyone thinks that Audric is the father, they're gonna be able to, like, quote-unquote, see it in mm-hmm. the baby. Like, for example, like, my parents aren't together, and my dad lives in New Hampshire, and I live in Arizona with my mom, and whenever I'm out with my mom, everyone's like, you look just like your mother, you're a spitting image, which I am, but when I go and spend time with my dad, everyone's like, you look exactly like your father, and it's like, but yeah. If you saw my mom and you knew who my mom was, you would know I really look like my mom.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess all that's to say, just because you say you look like somebody doesn't technically mean you look like them.
Right. And how big of a plot twist would that be? Like,
not for
like
you.
Everyone assumed, because when you think about it, like, if you write in, I'm so bad at the different points of views, but, like, there is, I think, a point of view where, like, the reader will know all, and then there's a point of view where, like, you only know what the characters know. So if you've just been told, and everyone's mm-hmm. just been told that Audric is the father, they're going to believe that, and us as the readers, we would have to believe that because that's the information we've been presented, mm-hmm. because that's what the characters believe. But then it is revealed later that Corian's actually the father, and then you're like, oh my god, it all makes sense, and it's like this huge, huge plot twist. And I think it would just be so cool to have called it. I know, I'm probably super wrong.
That would be super interesting. I am beyond interested for the next book because it's called Kingsbane. So mm-hmm. I honestly think we're going to get a lot more answers in that one. Like, it's literally titled Kingsbane. Like, she Which is the Bane of Audric, right? So I feel like we're going to get a lot of information in that one. But watch me be wrong because there's a third book, so.
And in one of the earlier episodes, I had said, like, oh, maybe Audric's still alive because the third book is obviously Lightbringer. But when we reread the prologue, she says that, like, she ripped Audric's heart and he literally disintegrated into ash. Yeah. I was like, oh, maybe he's not alive.
Ripped his heart out. Makes me want to freaking cry. And then the freaking chapter header that said his last words were he loved her.
I love you, I know.
They're going to make me hate Riel if they're doing this to Audric. I'm like, you gotta be kidding. Like, his last words are that he loves her? As she's ripping his heart out? Yeah. Please don't be true. You think, okay, Audric might not be dead, right? Even if we didn't see that scene or whatever. But I think that because it's like 2 years back, we just still have so much ground to cover that he's not going to be back. And that we're just going to see him a lot more in the next two books because he's not dead yet. Like,
right.
At least, like, a year and a half or something like that to cover in the next two books. Plus catching up, like, in that time right before we see in the prologue. So, I don't necessarily think he's going to come back. I just think we're going to see a lot of him and understand what happens because we have so much time to cover. So, why would Simon's powers be ripped away from him, but Eliana still have hers?
Because Eliana was born from Riel, which means Riel could pass some power to her. Mm-hmm. But when Riel... essentially, we assume she's dead. When Riel died, she wiped power. So I think I said this in last week's episode. My theory is that when Riel exploded and she wiped away all power, because that explains why there's no mm-hmm. magical abilities in Eliana's timeline, that is why Simon and Eliana got split up when they were time traveling, because the thread, which is essentially magic, that Simon was using to transport them through the liminal space, if you will, would literally have snapped and disappeared because magic was erased.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that Simon was taking it, but because Eliana was born from Riel, she could have passed on.
Yeah, it's just crazy that she still has it. I don't know. But it's obviously not the same. I know it's just now been unleashed, and, like, it took till Riel was 5 to unleash her powers. It's odd to me.
I think it's because, like, Riel can harbor or harvest whatever word you want to use for that, all 7 powers, mm-hmm. pass it along to her daughter. And then when magic was erased, like, it doesn't manifest in Eliana so wildly because it's not supposed to exist. And it's buried deep within her. And that's Remy's reasoning, right? Is that, like, her body heals herself because the power doesn't really mm-hmm. know what to do.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Craziness. But if that's right, then it's not because she's a Mark, is it?
I mean...
There's too many theories.
I know.
All right, we've already answered this one. Are we going to be reading the sequels?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Yes, a million times yes. Probably going to start them pretty soon after this. stoked to read
like
them.
Immediately.
Yeah, we're definitely buddy reading these again. We're gonna be chatting all about them. I'm excited for them. Would you reread this book?
I would reread this book after I finish the whole trilogy, just to go back and see all the things that we did miss.
I agree. I definitely won't reread it until I found out everything so that I can pick up all the missing pieces that we missed that were, like, dropped along. I don't reread very often. I can see myself also going back to the prologue through the next two books and rereading that and, like, familiarizing myself with, like, what's going to happen. I'm interested to see if we have another kind of prologue chapter in the next books, like another hint at what's to come. So, yes, I would possibly reread it. I don't know for sure if I'm going to reread it because I'm not a huge rereader, but...
I'm not either.
I can see myself possibly doing it to see what we missed, depending on how big of the plot twists we get.
Right.
Were all of your questions answered?
No. I mean, technically the father question has been answered, but do I believe it? No.
No, my question's a million bajillion percent have not all been answered. There's so many, like, threads left hanging.
Yeah.
Like, a million. Like, no, my questions were not answered. Anyway, no, all my questions weren't answered. I'm left needing to read the next books.
To keep reading, yeah. I need to know what happens.
Okay, do you think that your predictions have been right, or was there a big plot twist?
Well, I was right about Corian being the emperor, which I feel pretty good about. I don't think I was really blindsided by anything other than Ludivine at the end, but that one I didn't even have a shred of inkling about. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, literally no idea. Some of my predictions have been right so far, like Eliana being the baby. Eliana being one of the queens, which was, like, not really a big prediction. I kind of assumed that since we were reading about two queens and it was a dueling POV. But her being the baby was right.
One of the ones that I really want answered is the prophecy wrong? Is this translation of the prophecy? Because why introduce that there are 34 different translations of this prophecy if it is not going to serve the purpose of saying they've picked the wrong one and they don't understand what's actually, like, what the prophecy is actually stating?
I definitely believe that the prophecies are wrong because why else would we need to know that? And why else would that question have been put in our mind if it wasn't wrong?
Right.
And it's been subtly dropped that it could be wrong, I feel like. So, I think the prophecy's wrong. Maybe they're both bringing destruction to the world.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's about the gate. Who knows? I don't know. There's a lot of things that could be wrong with the prophecy. And we've only really seen one, like, full translation of the prophecy. Other than that, we've only seen, like, little tidbits of, like, other people's interpretations of it. Oh, another thing that I would want to reread is all of the chapter headers.
Yes.
Because not until, like, halfway through the book did I start paying attention or even, like, understand what they were trying to say to me.
Absolutely.
And since the prophet is now, seems like he's going to be a big character in the coming books, all of the word of the prophet's probably going to be important that we, like, pick up on what he has said. So, the chapter headers, definitely something I would reread.
I've got a question for you.
Love
which it. we've been introduced to a lot of characters between Eliana and between Riel. Which characters do you want to see more of in the sequel and in the final book?
That is a good question.
Because personally, I want to see more of Hob and Patrick.
I think, even though I typically don't like multiple POVs, that's just where we're at with this book. I think I'd like to see somebody else's perspective. So, yeah, I think I would like to see somebody have maybe a few chapters in some of the future books.
Like Simon?
Yeah, Simon, Audric, he's in such a position of power and so close to Riel. Simon would be great because I feel like we need a lot of his backstory still. So I want to see them in the book. I think we're going to get to see a lot more of Astyvar. So I think we'll get to see a lot of Na'vi, of Malik, of their parents, like, all of that. So I think we're gonna get more of them. Who else do I really
speaking
want to
of Na'vi, do you think since obviously one of the things that bothered me in the beginning is that Na'vi went through all these things, she was away from her kingdom, she was what do they call them, a maiden's hand or something like that, to Lord Mowbray. I was like, she's just so kind and sweet all the time. How has this not hardened her and made her like a little bit more sharp? Do you think since being tortured, head shaven, tattoos, bumps and whatnot, do you think that she's gonna come back and be a little bit more unforgiving?
I don't know. I see her shutting down more so. I mean, it could happen. I do think that a lot of the next book for Eliana is going to be in Astavar until they go to, if they go to Sildaria or wherever.
Yeah.
But I think we are going to get to see more of Na'vi. I don't know if that means that she's going to turn evil. Like I predicted last week, I thought that they were going to be in a relationship, and that doesn't seem like how it's going to go. I don't know. I don't know what Na'vi's story is going to be like. I think a lot's going to change in her personality, though, because this is obviously a huge deal that's just happened to her, so.
I think she's going to have a lot of trauma, like a trauma response in the next book, and be, like, I don't think she'll be an evil character. I just think that she just won't be the Na'vi we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be about, like, adjusting to this new Na'vi and how Eliana has to learn to treat Na'vi and help her through this crisis, essentially.
Yeah, even though I don't like him, I definitely need more of Corian and more backstory on him, more forward story on him. Like, there's a whole 2,000-year period that we're not going to get to see. And they could be jumping that period and, like, everyone's time traveling forward. But, like, what's going on in that 2,000 years that drastically changes everything? Oh, wait, 1,000 years. Sorry, I think. Yeah, 1,000 years. So what's going on in that 1,000-year period that we're not getting to see? I don't know. There's so much that I want to... There's so many characters I want to see continue. I want Remy to have the best life ever, so...
I know. Poor sweet little Remy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about you? Any other characters? You said the Hob and Patrick. The Hob. Malachi.
Frickin' back. No, I think, I mean, obviously the main character that I want to see more of. I obviously want more of new Ludivine, Audric, and Riel. I want to see Simon, Remy, Na'vi, and Eliana. But, like, Hob and Patrick just kept, like, they didn't, their only purpose was to help transport them throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, and because they're, like, leaders in this rebel organization, I really want to see more of them together and less of them just being, like, just there to explain how they've traveled.
Mm-hmm. Also, that reminds me, speaking of rebels, I want to know more about Eliana's father. And
oh, yes.
Him being a Red Crown rebel and that story and the story of him and her mom and all of that. And gaining
Eliana. Because yes. Simon says she doesn't. Mm-hmm. He doesn't think that her mom knew.
Yeah. So how? Did an angel, like, change their memory? Kind of like they were, I don't know. Like, what happens? What's going to happen?
I couldn't tell you.
I would love to see more of his story, and we haven't seen his body yet either, so he might not be dead, which would be helpful. That would help answer a lot of questions about Eliana in the early days if he's not dead. So maybe we'll get to see more of him.
Maybe that's what we'll get at the beginning of the second book, because, like, what happened immediately after the tether broke?
Mm-hmm. There literally is a 1,000-year period to find out more about, so... Craziness. Okay, well, what would you rate the book out of 5? Or what have you rated it, if you've already rated it?
I rated it 5 out of 5 on Instagram, on Goodreads. I rated it 5 out of 5 on Goodreads. However, I do believe once I start reading Kingsbane, and then eventually Lightbringer, that book one is going to be a 4 out of 5 for me, and the other two are going to be 5 out of 5s. I think I'm going to pull, like, an ACOTAR with this.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, like, this is good, but I've heard Kingsbane is, like, like, we're just, like, dipping our toes in the water with this book, and it's just gonna get crazy the rest of the way out, which really fully has me believing that, like, the next two books, I'm gonna be, like, so mind blown by them that they're instantly gonna be in my god tier level 5 out of 5, and then reflecting on Furyborn, I'm gonna be like, okay, that was, like, a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, right now I also have it out of 5 out of 5. This has to be the first series in a while, not in, like, a super long time, because I'm reading a lot right now, but out of my recent reads, this has to be one of my favorites in so long. Like,
that's so exciting.
It is. I mean, it is. Like, and the fact that it's a trilogy is super exciting too, because I don't have to leave the world for a little bit. I don't really think it's gonna take me that long to get through the world. But I love it. I'm super excited about it. It's a great trilogy so far. The first book has just been super interesting. And like I've said a million times, I've literally been obsessed with it. Like, mm-hmm. I've been dying to keep reading and keep reading and keep reading. And I don't want to read other books because I'm wanting to read Fureyworn.
Invested.
Yeah. And I wanted to read Kingsbane so bad, but we had to record this first. I have been distracting myself the last 2 days. I read a whole book yesterday and I read half a book today. So I'm like trying to knock some books out in between. But
breaking some of that movie magic for you guys listening in. We recorded week 3's episode 2 days ago. Finished the book that night. We both got off the podcast, immediately finished the book. We had like 100-something pages left. Like, we stayed up for like 4 more hours reading, discussing it back and forth, and then both of us were like, we have to record episode 4 now. Like, we need the next book.
I felt so bad because I didn't even ask Cameron to record yesterday because I was like, I have to give this poor girl a break. I'm sure she's so tired of recording this podcast. No,
I would have done it yesterday.
Because today's the 11th of the month, since we're breaking the movie magic. Today's the 11th and we're finishing the book and recorded all 4 weeks' episodes when this was not supposed to be done until the end of this month. So...
We're overachievers.
We're obsessed. Yes, we are overachievers. So yeah, we've obviously been recording very frequently because we had to keep reading.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else you want to talk about Fureyborn? What does Fureyborn mean?
Oh gosh, because they keep calling her the Fureyborn child, and I'm like, but what? I mean, it would make sense from the word of the prophet when he says, I would believe that, you know, the queen died angry, mm-hmm. that, like, Eliana was born out of anger, but I don't know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. But anyway, anything else?
No, I think that concludes our time. I'm really sad.
I am sad, too. I don't want to say goodbye to this book, but I am thankful we have the next book to go.
Yes.
And the next book. So... You know, I'm happy, but I'm sad that the podcast is ending and we're saying goodbye to Fureyborn. I think this one takes the cake for my favorite book that we've done on the podcast so far.
Oh!
It does, yeah. So, I'm super excited about it. I hope everyone else enjoys this book as much as I did, and I hope that you did. Thank you, absolutely. Cameron, for being on the podcast with me. Again,
you're welcome, my dear.
Make sure you go and connect with Cameron. She's super awesome and does super awesome things. So, go connect with her. And, drum roll please, just kidding, I had technically announced it last week. I recorded a little clip after, just so you guys could go ahead and buy the book. But we're doing 2 books next month, Children of Blood and Bone and Children of a Virtue and Vengeance. And I'm not going to tell you guys who I'm doing it with yet, but for the first week of Children of Blood and Bone, we're reading halfway through the book, which is chapter 34. So read to that and then come join me. Bye, guys.
Bye.
'S it for today's episode of Judge a Book. If you enjoyed, please make sure to give us a 5-star review before you go. Connect with me on social media. They're all linked in the pod description. And don't forget, next Monday, a new episode of Book Club will be released, and we can once again judge a book.